This is power.
You're power. Listening to Power in Heels. Imagine an industry that is completely fossil fuel free. Today's guest is fighting climate change from directly inside the construction and demolition industries. She is an award-winning sustainability expert and one of Sweden's top change makers. We are so excited to welcome the incredible Amanda Bornecki to the show.
So why don't we, I guess, start all the way back at the beginning, 13 years old, your entrepreneurial journey, how that all started.
Yeah, sure. I had a lot of energy as a child and my parents saw that and they thought it was a waste of energy just to do, sports or doing too much creative stuff without me earning money in a young age because I thought school was so boring. It was way too easy. I needed more stuff to do to keep my energy in the right place. My parents helped me start a jewelry company when I was 13, and that kind of saved my life, really. It gave me a purpose when I was a kid and helped me save up some money so that I could move from home and start studying in another city. So very vital for my youth.
What type of jewelry did you sell? This is awesome.
It was made from pearls. I imported them from China through some contacts with my mom. And at the very end, when I was almost 18, I did catwalks. In Paris. It was a kind of hair jewelry for Kerastase.
Jesus. So that's really, so really cool. Impressive.
Oh, thank you. It was very connected to hair salons in Sweden that they also sold like necklaces or waistbands and stuff like that in the hair salons. And that's how I got the contacts within Kerastase and L'Oréal as well.
Are there any important lessons that you learned while you were doing this? Because, of course, you're young and very impressionable at the time.
The greatest lesson that I can share is that you're never ready to start a company. You should just do it and learn along the way. Most people don't start their own companies because they're afraid of all the paperwork and all the admin stuff. But there is so much help with that nowadays. That's more like an excuse for you not to start and not the reason maybe for actually get going with whatever you want to do. So if you have a company idea that you've been thinking about for a while, set a deadline for yourself that before this date, I'm going to start my company or at least get the process starting.
Mm-hmm. So where did you eventually end up finding your passion for sustainability?
That time, 17 or 18, because I had my first like environmental class or something in biology in school. And they taught us about the overshoot day. And if you haven't heard about overshoot day before, it's kind of like the date where all the resources that the earth can produce for that year, that's when they end. So it's kind of like that you have a budget for the whole year, but you spend all your money in April. And for the rest of the year, you need to loan resources and funds from your friends, your family, and all future generations. And that's what overshoot day is, but for the planetary resources.
Well, that's a good way to think about that. Yeah, I think a lot of people don't necessarily see, they just think like, oh, there's like the end date where like the world's going to end. But they don't think about that, you know, every single year, every single day, we're doing the same thing again and again.
Huh. And the date is always earlier and earlier too, every year. Back in 2010, when I was 17, then it was, I think, for Sweden, it was in August. But right now it's in April. We're wasting a lot of resources. So as soon as I heard of Overshoot Day, I got the insight that I cannot keep having this company where I import all of these pearls and materials from China and then sell them in Sweden. I have to change my career path because this is not the future. Since that day, every waking moment has been a sustainability journey in my career. Every breath, every drop of sweat is to inspire to a more sustainable world.
That's when you kind of found your passion at 17. Of course, that's also when you start looking at post-secondary or higher education. What did that look like for you?
So I found a bachelor in environmental science here in Sweden that didn't have any exams. And that fit me perfectly because I'm not good in writing exams. And for me, it's pointless. Like I don't learn that way. But if we have a debate or a project, there's so many different types of examinations. And that program really had that. So I was really impressed by how that university saw the learning process of students. It's a method, it's called problem-based solving. So every week we got a problem and every Friday we should hand in the solutions. And that's how that education looked like for 3 years. Of course, when I was a student, I did everything in my power to apply for funds, apply for grants, apply for scholarships, just so that I could travel and do as many courses abroad. I spent 1 year abroad, half year in the Netherlands and a half year in India.
Wow, that's really cool.
You should really take those opportunities seriously when you're a student, because there are so many funds that you can apply for. If not in the university, then in Sweden, we can apply for funds on a Swedish level and a European level that has no connection to you or your university at all. So when I found that out, I applied for all the money that I could to fund projects for me to do abroad.
Coming up next on Power in Heels.
I actually never thought during my lifetime overshoot, they would actually be later 1 year.
Now, in our little like pre-interview that we had, you had mentioned that one of your challenges was after your master's degree, you didn't get hired. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
Because I thought it was ridiculous that I've run companies since I was 13. I have both a bachelor and a master's degree, and still I couldn't get any high position jobs in sustainability in Sweden or elsewhere. The feedback that I got was that I was always too extravagant, like too much, basically. Like everyone wanted me to just follow the guideline, follow the policies and just do as we've always been doing. And I can't do that, especially not being in sustainability and like waste management. So I didn't get any jobs, but I started my own company instead straight after my master's.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about that company?
Yeah, it was a consultant firm in communication, social media and sustainability. So I kind of call myself a personal trainer in sustainability, but for companies. So you just call me in when your company wants a climate diet. And that's the service that I sell still.
Oh, that's really cool. It's a great way to do it. You know, yes, it would have been cool to be hired by a company, but at the same time, what you're doing now has so much effect because you can touch more than just one company. Your reach is so much further and you can really make more change too.
Yeah, and especially in sustainability, most companies don't need to hire a full service position for that. Maybe they just need a lecture, or maybe they need me for just a couple of months and then I move on to the next company. Because the whole idea with the personal trainer is that I can't do the push-ups for the company. Like they have to do the effort to be sustainable. Otherwise, it would just be a quick fix for me and they will stop being sustainable as soon as I left. I'm there as a cheerleader. And if I would describe what I do on a daily basis, it's basically just making people passionate about things that they don't care about.
That sounds very rewarding too. I guess what made you decide to combine obvious sustainability, but then also more specifically with the construction industry?
I felt that the construction industry was just left out. 10 years ago, it was so much focus on what the consumer could do and not what the companies could do. So when I looked nationally and internationally about which sectors or industries are the most climate emitting ones globally, construction industry was always on the top. So I felt like, okay, I can do this two ways. One way is that I pitch myself to companies that are already sustainable and just help them to become more sustainable. Or I can pitch myself in a really tough and a hard industry, but they are probably the ones that need my help the most. That's the industry where I can do the most change and the most influence. That was a very strategic decision that I took to be part of the construction industry. Also because I couldn't find any other consultant in Sweden doing it. So I was like, fine, that's mine. My industry. No one can take it. It was a very good move to do back then. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's incredible. Yeah. And when we look at construction or demolition and everything, what does sustainability in that look like? Because of course, when you think of that, people just think new materials, you know, gas-powered equipment, heavy equipment. That's all that you can see, really. So what does it mean to become sustainable in those industries?
That's a very good question. And I think that even at the most like famous technical universities here, they still call the demolition process in the construction industry. That's part of the industry where I talk about hope and future and sustainability. They still call that part end of life, like basically death. everything is already planned to not be circular and not be sustainable. So my approach to this industry is, okay, what happens if we instead call that process the beginning of life? If we have no waste, how does this construction industry look? How will our buildings look? How will our cities look? Whole neighborhoods, societies? That's when it starts getting really interesting to have construction sites without waste.
So is this a change that needs to happen slowly, or how fast could you implement something like this in the construction industry?
Well, time is definitely against us, but at the same time, our shoot day is earlier and earlier every year. We don't have time to waste. We don't have material to waste. So it has to happen very fast, much more fast than we think. Like already next year, 2022, are we halfway to 2030 when we're supposed to achieve all the global agenda, like the sustainability goals by the UN? I think if the construction industry wants to be sustainable in the upcoming 10 years, then we need to build in way more reused material. We need to have machines run by electricity or gas, or at least a sustainable fuel like HVO that is palm oil free, very important, because otherwise the HVO is not that sustainable, the diesel. And because the interesting with the reused materials is that it also becomes a better work environment for the workers. And that's such an interesting intersection, because we are not allowed to reuse materials that are not clean. It can't be toxic in any way. But when we build new buildings, the materials are almost always toxic. And that's not a good working environment. So the construction industry puts sustainability in a whole new light, where everything kind of comes together. Sustainability is what holds the projects together and make kind of like an insurance for the future.
That's really interesting. Wow. And it's kind of enlightening, because of course we look at the construction industry and all that anybody sees is just a lot of waste, a lot of new products. But then to see that potential that's there, that of course you're implementing and you're making that change, that's really awesome. Is there any specific companies that you've like worked with or changed that you've like pushed through and seen happen that you are really, really proud of so far?
Yeah, in Sweden, I help the authorities. It's not a law, it's like regulations for how they're supposed to buy new services from the construction industry, kind of like a guideline through the jungle of sustainability. I gave them 14 recommendations of how you buy a sustainable construction service. And that's national for entire Sweden. It's going to be applied for all the Nordic countries in the future. But that was the reason why I was awarded with the environmental prize of the year from my industry. So I'm very proud of that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Of course, you focus mainly, or you work and live in Sweden, but do you hope to take your work globally, or I guess in other places of the world as well?
Yeah, of course. And I really think that Sweden have a lot of construction projects that we can export and do the same thing just in other places. Like you don't have to invent the wheel more times than once. And Sweden have one of the most progress in this area. We have so much expertise that we can spread to make the transition to a sustainable society even faster.
When you look at other industries, do you see one in particular that you think has real potential right now to be changing as well?
Definitely. If not the construction industry, then it would be healthcare. Both the healthcare and the construction industry have kind of the same challenges in a different way, because they both miss the digitalization train that most companies or most industries took in the 80s. But two huge sectors that needs to be digitalized. So much investments that can be made to either construction or healthcare to bring that tech to the construction industry. Because what the construction tech and the property technologies do is that they not only help the industry in a sustainability matter, they also help with the industry being transparent and less corrupt, because suddenly everything can be traced, even the waste. So it's not that easy to sell people or waste illegally, like across the borders. And that's going to be the biggest change for both industries.
Now, do you think that the pandemic has maybe delayed this change in the healthcare industry?
Yeah, and the healthcare system and the construction industry has a lot of parallels to it because the construction industry, they build the hospitals or build the healthcare system. They can be a lot more sustainable just reusing a lot of the tools and a lot of the material in the healthcare sector. But I'm not sure that it stopped the transitioning process. Like the sustainability questions are one of the few questions that I think increased during the pandemic because we finally saw, we have seen in real time what happens when we stop, when the factories close down, what happens when we're not as much in nature, like how exploited and how exposed the nature has been to us, and what happens to it when we stay home and don't do nothing at all. So I actually never thought during my lifetime that Overshoot Day would actually be later 1 year. This year was the first year that Overshoot Day was actually later and not earlier because of the pandemic. And it made me realize that, I mean, it's so unfortunate, of course, that so many people have died. But I think we also should realize what happens when we just slow down a bit. I'm not saying that we need to close down the factories forever and that people should be out of their jobs, but just taking consideration what happens when we slow down.
Thank you to our sponsor, Mackenzie Lake Lawyers.
Can you talk a bit about what it's like working in traditionally male-dominated industries such as construction, and what your experience in this industry has been?
It's a very common question that I still get. Usually my answer is that it's not a male-dominant industry. Just calling it that makes it more male-dominant and makes it like I don't belong there or that women don't belong there. So I usually just call it a heavy industry because it's kind of like people get it, but the construction industry needs to be more inclusive as well. Of course, my real answer to the question is that it has been challenging, but not impossible. I chose this industry because I wanted that challenge, because I figured out if I can convey a message to someone who is twice age as me, a different gender, someone with a different background, and someone with, they don't have higher educations, but they have a lot of specific educations, even in the construction industry, like for all the tools and all. If I can convey an environmental message to them, then I can do it to everyone. If I can figure out a method for that, then there is no industry or no category or no person that I can't convey this message to. So now I feel that I can talk about sustainability no matter who's in front of me.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And I really like your analogy earlier, or the way that you look at, you know, people calling an industry male dominated, because you're completely right. If you call it that, you're just allowing it to be that. You're not pushing the envelope there or changing the way that it is. You're absolutely right with that.
Yeah. And it's more important than you might think, because like when I post photos, or if I'm in a group photo with a lot of people who maybe don't look like me, then they usually want to separate me from them. Like the most standard thing is that all the men have the helmets on their head, but the women like hold their helmet on the hip. They always try to separates us. Or if they take a photo of the men, it's always in front of the construction site. But when they take a photo of me, then I'm in front of a tree or a bush or something way more green and fragile. We have to think about those things and how we communicate about sustainability and different people in the construction sector, because the setting around the photo is communication as well.
Absolutely. Wow. I've never thought about that. And you're completely right. Any construction photo that I've seen that have women in it, you're right. They always have the on their hip or not on their head, or they're just not anywhere near any sort of construction. You're completely right about that. That's really interesting.
And their head is always like little tilted as well, like, oh, while the men has a different power pose. I think you have to be very aware to what the current norms in different industries are in order to break them.
Yeah. Did you ever feel when you were walking onto these sites as an evaluator, as, you know, you're the coach, I guess, in this scenario, did you ever feel that you had to like dress a certain way so that they would take you more seriously?
No, it's a good question. And I definitely had a strategy going on my clothes when I went into a construction site, but it was more about Like usually the inspectors or the coach or sustainability person, whatever we're going to call them right now, they are have normal clothes and just like a vest and a helmet on top. And that separates you from the group, from the others within the construction site. When I entered, I was very important for me to have exactly the same shoes, exactly the same pants, exactly the same sweater, the same helmet. I want them to feel like I'm part of the unit. I'm on their side. So very different psychology here to make them feel like I'm part of the group.
That makes sense. Well, then they feel as if, you know, you're not some authority figure that's coming down to slam the hammer or anything on them, but you're there to help and work with them. That actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I call the regular inspectors for peacocks. Like it's some sort of elite vibe. They have a tiara on top of the helmet, like the cloak and everything. They're just so... All the advice and everything is just so wrong, but their advice is the best. It separates you from the group. Mm-hmm. And so you need to be on the same level, speak the same language, identify quickly with the group to be part of them.
What do you wish that people knew about sustainability, both in the construction industry, but then also just in general?
It's been one of my trademarks to talk about climate joy rather than climate depressions, because otherwise that's the narrative that most environmental stories or sustainability experts have. It's like the world is going to end tomorrow, so we need to do something now. And I don't have that line of communication because I don't think that it inspires to a new behavior. Shame can be useful to inspire short-term new behavior, but if you want that long-term change, you need something more positive, inspiring. And I want to say to everyone who listens about this episode about sustainability that you can be a different narrative than currently are right now. You can be whatever narrative that you think would benefit you the most or the industry that you are the most.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And there is a lot of this, you know, the world is going to end. And there is an impending doom. Of course there is. But I do like your point of view, looking at it as an opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. And I think most people think about sustainability as something equal to environmental sustainability. But sustainability is also the economic development and the social development of an industry or a company. So many people working with sustainability think that they just have to be in the environmental sphere. I took the opportunity to be more part of the economic sustainable sphere, because that kind of made me closer to the private sector and the company sectors, which is the category that I want to coach. So that can also be something very strategic to, depending on who you want to work with in the future, then you can advance in different sustainability areas.
Now, when we talk about, you know, sustainability as a career and the way that you've turned this into a career, it's not something that I think, you know, when you go to your grade 10 class and then they make you learn about careers that you could have, you know, it's not something that comes up very commonly. So if you had to give some advice to younger people who are looking for careers maybe in this industry, what sort of career options do you think there are for them?
Oh, construction industry is so huge. I mean, it's a 100 billion euros sector just in Sweden. Like it's a huge sector. So it can basically be anything. Like if you have a degree in economics or in HR, work at a construction company, you can do everything you do in other businesses also in the construction industry. And the construction industry usually don't have that much inclusion or like female workers. In Sweden, the female CEOs, it's the only industry where the female CEOs have a higher salary than the men.
Wow, more reason to join. There you go.
Get paid more. I mean, you can also work at the floor. Like you don't have to be part of the office. My favorite roles in this industry have been kind of like 50-50 in the office and 50% on the construction site, where I actually help to demolish the buildings myself, just standing there with with a hammer and just tear that wall down. It's really fun to connect with the...
Yeah, it's my favorite thing, smashing things up.
Like you don't even have to be good at building things. You can also be part of the demolition industry, which is very physical, but I thought it was really fun and very high paid jobs.
Hey everybody, it's Whitney here. I hope you're enjoying this episode so far. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast for more step-by-step guides to success from powerful women every single week.
What does a typical day on the job look like for you?
Oh, wow. Like sitting in a Canadian podcast, just having fun. No, but when I wake up, I have a meeting with my management board. Those are the main people that I consult right now. I'm hired at a company called Sweco, which is a huge global brand. Then I coach my division in sustainability. So we have a meeting board in the morning, and then I talk to customers all day. Like a personal trainer. It's like a training session instead of a meeting. Like, okay, what are we going to focus on today? Are we going to do energy, waste management? Are we going to do maybe the fuels in the machine? Just like how you would work out in a gym. Like, are we doing biceps today? Are we doing legs? What the customer wants that specific day. And that's how I coach them.
Can I ask if you look back on your career so far and everything that you've learned, if you had the chance to start over, but you knew everything that you know now, would you do anything differently?
No.
No? I love that answer.
Like, that's not how I was raised. Yeah, I think I will have to do like a shout out to my parents. Like, they raised me in a very specific manner that you kind of always have to take the opportunities that you have in front of you. So I feel like I've always done that. I feel like I've always done my best in my career or in school. There was no one who believed that I could work with sustainability for like full time and be successful. But I feel like I saw something in myself and that others couldn't see. So I just made a run for it. And usually I talk about it like being on the beach. You see these huge waves of opportunities. And I just took my surfing board and started to surf, and just the wave got me wherever I should go. But most people that I meet are still sitting on that beach waiting for the right wave. And you can't do that because you will never be ready. You just have to grab that surfboard and just run out to the beach and go for it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That's so important that we don't like just sit there and overthink things all the time. Just gotta go for it. You know, in certain situations.
Yes, you learn on the way.
Exactly. What are some ways that the average person can help make a difference, like an, I guess an environmental difference, and live a more sustainable life?
That's a good question. And of course, I coach consumers as well. Sweden is a very like sustainability conscious mind country. So I'm not sure if that's something that I could do abroad, but would love to, of course. Then usually I coach people in different areas. The most like efficient you can do as a private consumer is to eat less meat, ride a bicycle instead of your car, mm-hmm. change the energy company to your house or your apartment so that it's renewable energy instead of coal or nuclear. It's also a lot about what you consume. Like, that would be the store, to not like shop products that are just for a single use. You consume products that you can reuse, and maybe try not to buy, maybe for a week or for a month, try not to buy anything at all and see what happens, what you really, really need. Can you borrow it? Can you rent it? Can you loan it from a friend? Like, how would your days look like if you just stopped consuming? I usually do a month or twice of that every year, just to look at all the fun new renting services that pops out in Sweden. It's kind of like the straw. Like, if 8 billion people stop using one straw in one drink, like, that's 8 billion straws. Like, it's so much. Yeah. That's a huge pile of waste that we just stop having just because everyone said no just once. Like, not for all the drinks, but for just one straw. And that's all the small things in sustainability have a huge impact when many people do it. I think the last thing that I would coach a consumer about is how they invest their pension and their funds, to do it in funds that are sustainable and fossil free. Like, in Sweden, your pension is placed in just a regular fund. It's not sure that it's fossil free. So then you have to manually place them in other funds to make sure that they are sustainable.
That makes a lot of sense, but it's something that people don't necessarily always hear. You know, you always hear the turn off your lights, you know, ride a bike, you know, those things, but you don't hear about, you know, how your money can also make a difference in the way you invest it as well.
Mm. And I love that one because it's usually a decision that you just do once and then all your money is placed in that fund like forever. It's not like every meal, every light, every ride you have to do with your car. Like, it's just one decision that makes an impact through your whole life.
Definitely. Of course. If you were able to create like a step-by-step guide for young people to, I don't want to say it this way, but like saving the world, basically, you know,
I love that,
ending climate change. If that was possible, what would you put in this step-by-step guide?
Oh, that's I feel like this should be my future book. If I ever become a writer and like write the book, this will be my book.
Yeah, it's all yours.
Like, the guide through a sustainability jungle. That's probably going to be the title.
Save the world 101.
It can be one of those like self-diary categories where you just put in all the information yourself, and every month you can have like a different challenge. I'm gonna do that.
We'll interview you again when the book comes out and we'll do a feature on it. So
yeah, perfect. I'm gonna do a quick search here for responsible consumption. It's a website that kind of guides and help consumers about what the steps that they should do. So that's a great tip for everyone out there listening. Responsible consumption,
we can link that in the website post as well. So if you listen to this right now, go down to the website and you can see the link right there.
They will have the answer to your question, and like so many different guides. Like if you want to start eating less meat, they have a guide for that. If you want to do, they call it be a circulant. If you're not a consumer, then you're a circulant because you don't consume anything that goes to waste. You just keep the products in a circular, in a loop. So how you become a circulant is one of their biggest campaigns that I really, really love.
So let's say that you were asked to speak at the UN Climate Change Conference. What is something that you would want not only the leaders to know, but also the next generation of both activists and leaders?
That's a great question. And so funny that you're mentioning it, because I am speaking at a UN conference like really soon.
That's so cool.
Yay, that's awesome. Exciting.
Yeah, I was like, how did you figure this out? Who have you talked to? Like, this is, it's so secret. Like, yeah,
we have our resources. No, we're kidding, we just
right. Yeah, that's a great what's it called? I got totally caught off guard, but thank you that you would consider me speaking to the UN.
Of course.
I would definitely talk about the climate joy and about how you make people passionate about something that they don't care about. And then I would have an example from the construction industry, which is an industry based on like fault reports. The whole development of that industry is based on the workers just calling in, hello, boss, I made a fault today, so I think you should write a report on me. Or even worse, like, hello, boss, my colleague made a fault today on the construction site, so I think you should report him. And I mean, no one reports anything like that, because that's not how we are wired. But the only thing that I did was that I stopped calling it and made it more a suggestion, improvement reports. Just by changing that name, we increased reporting with 330%.
Wow. Jesus.
Yeah.
And that's what happens every time when you work with climate joy instead of climate depression or climate negative narrative. When you're talking about something positive, people want to be a part of it because they want to improve. They want to be successful and part of that journey and really play on that psychology trait that every human have. And that for me is how we will achieve the global development goals to 2030.
There's lots of other, activists in the world, people that are very public about, environmental change and sustainability. When you look at them, and the first one that's coming to mind is of course the young Greta Thunberg. What do you think of their approach? Because I feel their approach might be slightly different than yours. How do you feel about their approaches to all of this as well?
Yeah, totally get where you're coming from. And I think that they have like an urge of panic, or they really feel like the climate, it's kind of like a fire alarm, that the planet has a fire alarm and no one hears it. And that's kind of the narrative that they go out with. And it will bring a short-term change. But for the long-term change, we need a different narrative, especially for the companies. Like that narrative is perfect if you're trying to lobbying politicians and other decision makers. But if your aim is to influence companies or maybe like a directive board or something like that, then you're going to need a different approach. And I also want to highlight to all the youth out there listening to this, look out for the Regeneration 2030. It's a great platform if you are a youth and want to get more involved in the sustainability movement. It's a global movement that meets once a year in Åland, Finland, to discuss sustainability motions that they then hand in to the European Union Commission. Because that it's so few youth politicians representing in the like the highest, most classified rooms in Europe, then all the youth get together and do a motion and then hand it in to the politicians. And I think that's amazing. So please be part of that if you're into this kind of stuff.
Yeah, that sounds so cool. Now, as much as Whitney and I would love to just sit here and talk to you for hours on end, we do have to bring the episode to a close. But before we do that, we would like to hand over our virtual mic to you and open up this time to say any last words of advice or wisdom, anything that you think our listeners should hear.
I want to thank you again for inviting me to this podcast. It's been a great opportunity for me, for everyone who is listening out there. I mean, I'm a very public person right now in Sweden, and I thought that I needed to be that to do great change and to influence and to impact companies to be more sustainable. But I don't think that should stop you. If you don't want to become a public person or that icon, you should just do your best wherever you are right now, and don't tell anyone. You don't need to be that public person to be successful. Just do your best and ride those opportunity waves, whatever suits you the best, and not listen to anyone else. Don't be scared to just move at full pace at all time.
That is some fantastic advice. Thank you for that. And thank you for joining us today. I learned so much. Macy, I'm sure you learned so much too. This is a really great conversation. And I know for sure that our listeners really, really appreciate everything that you had to share today. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for listening today. We hope you learned something new. Now, don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and check out our website for more exclusive content. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.
This is